Stop Salting Your Own Mine with Fool's Gold. It's episode 4016, LeaningTowardWisdom.com, the podcast. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentra, your host here at Leaning Toward Wisdom. Yes, the website is the same name, leaningtowardwisdom.com. If you want to see the blog post or the accompanying show notes, which are extensive, I'll tell you, you don't have to take notes. You can go find them. Just go over and look for episode 4016, episode 4016. I want to talk with you about how we can salt our own mind with fool's gold. Some people can do it for us, but yeah, it's a little bit about self-deception. We'll do it next. A Leaning Toward Wisdom is exactly what the name implies. It's just our collective effort to lean away from foolishness and lean harder toward wisdom. And part of leaning toward wisdom is to practice the art of self-examination. Try not to fool ourselves. Well, and try not to let other people fool us either. Fool's gold. You know what fool's gold is. It is that brassy yellow mineral. It's pyrite. You know, and it can be mistaken for gold. It's about as valuable as that empty gold pan that I have pictured in the show notes. But you can picture an empty gold pan. You know what the miners use to pan gold. It's worthless. Well, the empty pan is worthless. But fool's gold is worthless too. Salting is a con job where people will insert valuable evidence when there really isn't any. And in gold mining, it can happen by putting a bit of gold. Well, you could put a bit of gold into a drilling sample. You could put a bit of gold in places where you know people are going to go pan. And it will make investors think there's gold there. Or it will make a potential claim buyer or claim leaser that there's gold there. BREX, BREX. Was one of the more recently infamous cases of salting. This was a Canadian company, and they were once just a penny stock until they announced that they had discovered big amounts of gold in their Borneo drilling operation. Well, news traveled fast, and the stock split. It reached a peak in Canadian money of $286.50, had a market cap over $6 billion in Canadian money. And about a year later, in 1997, they went belly up when it was discovered that the gold samples were fraudulent. You see, BREX had conned lots of people out of millions and millions and millions of dollars. And as with most cons, people wanted to believe they'd get rich by investing in BREX. It's the same reason that people buy lottery tickets. We all enjoy dreaming of being rich or richer. We see what we want to see. And con men have long relied on our own human nature to betray us. Because we want to believe that the deal, yes, it's too good to be true, but we want to believe it will be true for us because we're special. And so our dreams can often lead us astray. And sometimes we salt our own gold mine. All you have to do is look at Powerball lottery drawings and look at Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes to the case studies of maybe your favorite IM, your internet marketing guru. And we can look at all of that stuff and we don't care. We could care less, in fact, about what the FTC calls typical results. because it's these outliers that drive our brains crazy. If I can do it, anybody can do it. That might just be the most used sentence in all of guruism selling. I mean, whether we're talking about building websites using WordPress, which is the platform that Leaning Toward Wisdom is built on, or if we're talking about using YouTube to drive business, or talking about guest blogging to build traffic, or opening our own dining room table affiliate marketing business, it doesn't matter. The person selling us the know-how is likely to tell us, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Or if I can do it, you can do it. But it's a lie. It's a lie. Not just anybody can do it. The fact is, most people aren't doing it. Most who are trying are failing. Well, okay, who's to blame? Well, the people who are failing, of course. I mean, come on. Had they followed the instructions meticulously, had they done exactly what the teacher said in the exact way the teacher prescribed, and had they worked harder, that's a big one, had they worked harder, then they certainly would have had some success. I mean, it is the out used by every unscrupulous marketer to explain why their customers didn't achieve the success they expected. Now, depending on who you ask, you will get a variety of answers to the question, how many people out of 10 really do the work? That is, for every online course that's offered to teach us how to make money online, or how to perform better SEO, search engine optimization, or how to shoot better video, or anything else you want to name, how many students out of 10 actually use the instruction by doing anything and sticking with it long enough to make a go of it? It's always a very low number. I've heard 1 out of 10. I've heard 3 out of 10. That's about the highest I've ever heard. And I've heard 0 out of 10. And naturally, it depends on the subject matter. It depends on the instruction. It depends on the instructor. It depends on the target market. It depends on the price point and a host of other things. I do know of some technical training online that has a very high rate of students who actually incorporate the training into their lives and do the work, but it's a, you know, a ridiculously narrow niche, and it's a high price. And it's a crowd that is just prone to do it. But I also know of many others where the course creator admits nobody ever follows through. And you know what? In some cases, it's not the fault of the course, and in some cases, it's not the fault of the course creator. It's just people don't do it. So, okay, is the course creator at fault? Not necessarily. Does it mean the course creator is a con artist? No, of course not. Does it mean the course creator is doing everything they can to help the student take action? No, well, it doesn't mean that either. All of this proves the point. There are almost always so many moving parts that it's impossible to make hard, fast statements. Oh, but man, we like hard and fast statements because we love absolutes, even though absolutes are often wrong. Are you a podcaster? Never record your podcast into a computer using audio recording software. Always record into a freestanding digital audio recorder. Always use WordPress to create your website or your blog. Never use anything else. Always leave the comments on your blog open. Never close them. Always collect email addresses on your website. Content is always king. Never cold call. I could list tons more, but you get the idea. And you're likely thinking of a few that I missed. These absolutes, these hard and fast statements that, well, they sound right. They sound plausible. We hear them every single day. And as we hear them repeated over and over by a variety of sources, we tend to believe that they are true. Question, what if they're not? What if they're not true? Fool's gold lures us because we so desperately want to believe it's real gold. And because we don't know the difference between fool's gold and real gold. And frankly, sometimes we salt our own mine because of what, well, Zig Ziglar, he called stinking thinking. And because we want fast and easy. Well, unscrupulous marketers bank on a few fundamental facts of human nature. Number one, most people are greedy. Well, most of us are greedy enough that we'd love to make some easy money. Number two, most people are lazy. Well, most of us are lazy enough that we'd take the easy way over the more difficult if we're given a choice. Number three, most people accept the face value of a thing. Well, okay, most of us just don't know enough to know what's real and what isn't, so we may tend to think a thing is real or true, even if it's not. Number four, most people will swallow number three if the person telling us seems credible and likable, or if he comes across like an expert, or if he appears extraordinarily successful. Number five, most people want to be something they're not. Most of us don't have any trouble dreaming of being something bigger, being more popular, being famous, being wealthier. And number six, most people feel they deserve to have it better. Now, that's not an exhaustive list, but it is, I think, comprehensive enough. Those six things, I think, are comprehensive enough to give us an idea of the psychology of the sale, or in some cases, admittedly, the psychology of the con. We are all susceptible to both the sale and the con. Now, okay, maybe not the same con, but let's face it, we can all be duped. And few people can deceive us as well as we can deceive ourselves. Enter the deadly anecdotal evidence that lures us to think there's gold where there is no gold. Salting a gold mine works because people are looking for gold. They want to see gold. They want to believe they can get gold. All you have to do is watch a few episodes of the Discovery Channel's Gold Rush. Maybe you've seen these. You will quickly see that the key to gold mining, literal gold mining, is to get good pay dirt. Because the truth is, it takes just as much work to mine dirt that has no gold in it as it does to mine dirt that's got a lot of gold in it. The quality of the pay dirt, that determines the success. And so the more money per yard yielded by the dirt, the more money the miner's going to make. It's just basic math. Now, there are two things to think about. Two things to think about when we think about success in gold mining. And I think they're worth thinking about as we chase what I'll call internet gold. Number one, you must have gold-rich pay dirt. Maybe better said, you must know where the gold is. Work around the clock, be the hardest working miner in the area, and based on solid experience, you can think, man, this dirt, it looks really good. But if there's no gold in the dirt, you're working in vain. Because you're going to fail in spite of working hard. One of the more interesting characters in the series Gold Rush is a guy by the name of Tony Beats. He's a guy, I think he's from the Netherlands, but he's up in the Yukon, and he never mines an area without first doing some test drillings to make sure there's gold in the ground. He doesn't want to spend a lot of effort and time if there's no gold. And in fact, you can go to the Discovery Channel's website, and here's what it says. Here's one little snippet that it mentions in his bio. Quote, he believes the key to his massive success is that he has drilled every inch of his property so he knows where the gold is. So number one is you got to know where the gold is. Number two, you've got to get the gold out of the ground. I heard somebody, I don't know who, but I heard one of the characters on Gold Rush say, we're all millionaires. Now we just have to get our money out of the ground. Oh, okay, well, that sounds good. Unfortunately, most of these guys, when you watch this series, and I've watched it for years now, most of these guys struggle with adversity. They struggle with finances to get the gold out of the ground, assuming it's there to begin with. And that's a huge assumption. Well, it requires tons of equipment, literally. Lots of fuel, lots of diesel, thousands and thousands of man hours, and countless equipment repairs. Oh, and by the way, it requires a bit of good fortune when it comes to things like the weather. And all of that is assuming that the dirt has good gold in it. Let me point out just two. I just want to have us consider two of the most lucrative and, by the way, competitive spaces around. Diet, weight loss. Diet and weight loss is one of the most competitive and yet lucrative spaces on the planet. Book after book is published. Program after program is invented and sold and marketed. And infomercials, well, infomercials are just everywhere. Why? Because the market is enormous. It's gigantic. In fact, according to a 2013 report by Market Data Enterprises, Inc., it's just a market research outfit, and there's plenty of these out there, by the way. I just picked this one. But according to them, in 2012, revenues in that space were $61.6 billion. They estimated that there were 108 million dieters in America, 82% of whom were going to try to lose weight all on their own. I mean, come on. It's a gold rush space that is filled with all sorts of characters. And it's lucrative if you can find some success. And that's why so many people are in the space. I mean, come on, just do the math. If you could somehow snag 1% of the market, well, you'd have $616,000. I mean, that's the magic of a huge market. Now, here's the downside. The downside is it's overcrowded. And so just earning a smidgen of market share is extremely difficult. The other lucrative and competitive space is making money online. It's the IM space. It's internet marketing. And it's got a low barrier of entry. Doesn't cost a bunch of money to get into it. Coupled with some stories of wild success, well, that just draws tons and tons and tons of people into the space. And the message is intriguing. I mean, the message is, it's compelling. Make money at home doing what you love. Well, who wouldn't want to do that? Follow your passion and the money will follow. I love it, don't you? What's not to love? And depending on the source that you want to cite and depending on how you'd like to define internet marketing, the numbers are equal to or greater than the weight loss industry. In fact, around $62 billion is a number that you'll see. You might find some lower numbers. You might find some higher numbers. It's really hard to quantify because people can define it differently. When I say internet marketing, I mean business opportunity. I mean biz op, or I mean the make money space. Now, some other people, they might include digital marketing when you say internet marketing, and that's a very different animal. But any way you want to look at it, it's a crazy big market. Now, both of those markets, both the diet and weight loss and making money online markets, have a whole lot of interest because they fuel two of our top desires as people. A, to lose weight. B, to make money. And both of those industries, by the way, in recent years have come under enormous scrutiny of the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, because they advertise using case studies and testimonials. And today it's much more highly regulated or enforced than it was just 5 years or so ago. And even so, marketers are always among the most clever people on the planet. And I'm not talking about just unscrupulous marketers, just marketers, period, because come on, marketing requires some creativity if you're going to do it well. And it's not just marketing's fault that some people use unethical practices, but the fact is, unethical practices work extremely well. We want to be believers because millions of us desperately want to lose weight. Millions of us desperately want to make more money and make it sound easy. And man, we will whip out our credit card faster than you can say push button easy. A convincing lie is tough to resist. And especially if it's our own lie to ourselves. Enter anecdotal evidence. Today, marketers will disclose, and you'll find all kinds of disclaimers and disclosures. I've got them on my website. You should have them on yours. Some are more open about it than others. And we all say the same thing, that the results aren't typical. But in the same breath, some marketers will try to tell us a compelling story of one person who achieved crazy, wild success. And if they have thousands of customers, they'll give us quite a few stories because, well, come on, they only need a few to convert us into believers. And the bigger their client base is, well, okay, the more successful stories they're going to have. It's just a numbers game. We all love outliers. Well, okay, yeah, you can love the book that Malcolm Gladwell wrote, but we love outliers. And we especially enjoy thinking that they might apply to us. We don't consider them outliers. We don't think of them as being atypical. And it doesn't matter how often the marketer tells us or puts text on a screen or puts a disclaimer on a website, results are not typical. In spite of all that, we want to believe we can achieve those results. Maybe you can't, but I can. Let me give you two honest examples of this. I've been podcasting for a long time, and I enjoy many fellow podcasters and their work. And I'm geeky enough that I enjoy the guys who podcast about podcasting. Yeah, okay, I enjoy some more than others, but I'm into it. This year, the podcasting space has experienced a huge leap in the number of participants. And I think it's great because with more people doing it, it's just statistically obvious that it's more likely we're going to get some great content. Because the truth is, most podcasts suck. Now, you might think this podcast sucks, and that's okay. I mean, it's just how things are. And frankly, it's how things should be. We're all free to decide for ourselves what we enjoy, what we think is good, and what we want to listen to. But in the world of podcasting, and maybe more appropriately, in the world of podcasters who want to make money podcasting in some form or fashion, there are two big outliers. Pat Flynn, his website is smartpassiveincome.com, and John Lee Dumas, his website is eofire.com. Now, Pat Flynn is an affiliate marketer, and he began his online career after being laid off from working in architecture. In fact, my first introduction to Pat Flynn was an interview that two fellows who run a podcast as well as an internet marketing school, they had him on because he was one of their students. And that's where I first heard his story, long before he was, you know, kind of a household name among the online crowd anyway. Well, he was studying to take the LEED exam. That's the green technology and construction kind of stuff, and it's LEED. He decided to put his notes up on the web so he could access them from anywhere. That was just, you know, it was going to make studying easier for him. His notes resided on a free web that his ISP, his internet service provider, gave him. It's this free website. The URL was long. It was ugly. It wasn't easy to find, but it didn't matter because he was just doing it for himself. But thanks to some search engine magic, other people began to stumble, literally stumble on these online notes, and they would communicate with him. Well, he saw an opportunity after he lost his day job. He decided to sell his LEED exam training online and quite quickly found himself making $8,000 a month. Well, he wasn't making $8,000 a month working, you know, as a low-level guy in an architecture firm. And he'd likely be the first to tell you that serendipity played a big role in his success. But come on, to be fair, he had to see the opportunity and he had to work the pay dirt really hard. He earned success. You know, but the world's full of people who see an opportunity and some who think they see one, and people who work very hard. There's just no gold in the dirt that they're working. Or they just don't get the timely break, maybe, that might propel them toward success. And so along the way, Pat decided to pull back the curtains and be more transparent than most marketers were willing to be. In fact, than most marketers are willing to be. He began to release a monthly income report where he would itemize his income and his expenses of his business. Well, the internet just gobbled that up. I mean, his business really took off because he was attracting hordes of people who wanted to learn what he was willing to teach. Because guess what? They wanted to make money. Now, Pat is not salting the mine. He is, however, through no fault of his own, he is serving as an outlier where people are able to salt their own mine when they look at his story, when they read his content. Maybe better said, they can salt their own mind when they see his success. And that's not his fault. I mean, he's sharing his insights, his strategy, his income. People are making their own assumptions because, in his own modest way, he sincerely seems to believe that if he can do it, so can you. That's where he's wrong. Because everybody who says that is wrong, even though I think most of them believe it. Okay, some don't. Some are just saying it. But I think most honest, well, honest marketers for sure, they do think that if they can do it, anybody can do it. Deep down, I think Pat knows his success is far from typical. Now, that doesn't prevent him from thinking that if he can do it, then so can you, if you put in the work. But, you know, come on, he's being polite, because that's who he is. Some years ago, I began to focus a few people that I was coaching on supplemental income. You know, an extra $200 to $500 a month would be a meaningful difference for these people. Well, shoot, that'd be a meaningful difference for most of us. And even though I'm a quantum leap guy, I'm a guy who, it's hard to rally the crew around a 2% increase. It's hard to rally the troops around, come on, let's work like crazy for a few extra bucks. No, come on, we want big bucks. But in spite of all that, there's no denying that enough money to cover an average car payment, that would alter the lives of millions of people. And increasingly, I'm seeing people, even Pat, give more time to encouraging people to just try to make a few extra bucks, not some monthly six-figure income. John Lee Dumas has a bit of a different story, but he decided to follow Pat's strategy, publishing a monthly income report. John is an avid podcast listener, and he decided that he wanted to start a daily podcast focused on interviewing entrepreneurs because that's what he was into. That's what he wanted to hear. The shows are about 30 minutes long, and every show follows an identical interview process. Every guest is asked the exact same questions. He records these shows every Monday, working from daylight to dark, and then he schedules those to release throughout the week. He solved a problem that he had. He wanted to listen to a podcast every day. Well, people told him he was crazy, and they gave him all reasons under the sun why it would never work. He didn't listen. And he built a significant audience, which afforded him to get advertisers and sponsors. And that grew to over $30,000 a month just in that. And strategically, once he had built a substantial following, he launched some of his own products and services. In fact, most notable of those is Podcaster's Paradise. It's a high-end, one-time purchase that includes podcast training and an exclusive community. No, I'm not a member. I'm not an affiliate. And I've never been inside except through watching one of his webinars about it. And currently, when you look at his income report, the majority of his six-figure-a-month income is derived from that offering. Well over $100,000 of his monthly income comes from, right now, Podcaster's Paradise. Now, he's got other offers in the works because he knows he has to remain relevant if he's going to make his business sustainable. Well, again, John's success, through no fault of his own, that serves to spark other people to think, I can do that too. Why can't I do that too? John's an outlier. Most podcasters don't earn any money. Some earn a little bit of affiliate income. And among the podcasters who do make money, they earn money mostly because the podcast attracts clients to the products or services that they sell. Yes, there's exceptions. Again, outliers. And you could say that Pat and John, they both do that. But it's true that both of them are earning some serious money as a result of their podcasts. Well, you know what that means. Yeah, it means other podcasters are attracted to their stories. Logically, we can look at their stories and we may realize, man, they are achieving extraordinary success that's anything but typical. Well, that doesn't matter. I mean, because of their success, it's easy to spot other people attempting to replicate their work. No, it's not likely to work, but it's what we do. We see success and we're like little kids. We copycat. All you have to do is go to Apple iTunes and you will spot countless daily podcasts interviewing entrepreneurs. Why? Well, because people saw John Lee Dumas doing it and making six figures a month. That's why they're doing it. They saw him do it and gain wild success. Okay, John was the first to do it, and he gained a very large audience. I predict he'll remain in that top spot for that podcast format unless somebody else comes along who can do it uniquely better. Could it happen? Sure. I don't think it's likely. And no matter, people are going to continue to try because they see his success. Fool's gold. It's anecdotal evidence, and we gobble it up. We don't care how many people failed. We just care about the one, maybe a few more, who achieved wild, crazy success. Don't show us the people who made a little bit of money and are working hard to build something relevant and sustainable. Now, show me the person who made $1 million in their first year. Show me the person who went from zero to 100,000 Twitter followers in 6 months. It's the lottery playing mentality, or the sweepstakes dreamer. Who among us can't imagine becoming filthy, stinking rich overnight? I mean, what if your doorbell rang right now and you answered the door to a major sweepstakes where your prize was $1 million a year for life? Can you imagine? Sure you can. We all can. It's the power of the human brain to be able to project ourselves into a situation that's not real. Okay, well, maybe it's not real yet. Maybe it'll never be real. Well, it doesn't matter. We can still play a lot of what-if games in our head because our brains give us that ability. No other animal on the planet has that ability. Which is why anecdotal evidence, fool's gold, stories of outliers, it's why they're so effective. Even if it's unintentional, even if it's used with subtlety. I mean, it's even more effective when unscrupulous marketers knowingly incorporate it into their strategy, and frankly, quite a few do. All right, well, let's put a bow on this and let's talk about what's a person to do. Let me give you some bullet points. And again, you can find these. You don't have to write anything down. All of this you can find over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just look for episode 4016. What can we do? How can we protect ourselves? Well, we can start by guarding our heart. Don't let your emotions overrun your sensibilities. Every con, every deception banks on working your emotions. We can stop the hero worship. People with money or financial success are not inherently better than you. They're not inherently better than anybody else. I mean, in some cases, they may even be insufferable scoundrels. So stop the hero worship. Look for stories of failure. You know, this is why I am such a fan, and I've been a fan since he started the project. Andrew Warner's work over at Mixergy is extremely valuable. Granted, he tends to talk to people who are in the high-tech spaces. you know, software people and people that are doing SaaS things and people that are in the technology space, which I'm attracted to. But what really is attractive is during his interviews, early on in his interviews, he wants to hear about the failures. He wants to hear about the challenges. He wants to hear about the time that you were crying because it just wasn't working out. And man, those often provide more insights than hearing about the success. Next, realize what you know to be true. Just because they did it does not mean that you or anybody else can. We're all different. Our talents, our skills, our connections, our backgrounds, our circumstances, they're uniquely our own. Along with, I might add, our opportunities and our work habits. Every realistic, and I need to really emphasize that word, every realistic successful person that I've ever known willingly admitted that serendipity propelled them toward success. And quite often, man, it arrived just in the nick of time. Just at the time when they were about to quit or give up, some breakthrough happened. Next, average is average, because that's where most of us live. And so the success that we aspire to, well, that's not average. I mean, we want wild success. Stop comparing yourself to others. Your best is your standard. That doesn't mean that you can't learn from the stories of other people, but it does mean that the specifics of their story may not apply to you. Learn the bigger lessons, like being opportunistic instead of pessimistic. Next, the road to success always goes through the city of failure. Now, for some, the city of failure is small. For others, it can be as large as Dallas-Fort Worth. Dallas-Fort Worth covers 12 counties and 9,286 square miles. Sometimes we get in that kind of a failure. Failure can be short-lived, like an illness, like maybe a 24-hour bug, or it might be like a long-term illness where we feel like we're never going to get out of the hospital and go home. I mean, it is what it is. Our job is to endure it and overcome it if we can. Success goes to the tenacious, persistent fighter who refuses to give up on figuring it out. That doesn't mean that you don't give up certain actions and ideas, but it means you refuse to give up on figuring it out. Next, restrict your info diet. Who do you follow? Why do you follow the people you follow? Carefully examine the content that you allow into your brain and into your daily habits. Does it fuel your daydreaming, or does it compel you to take action? Ditch the stuff that just panders to wishful thinking. That's easy. It's destructive, because that's where the hordes are. You got to break away from the horde. Well, you got to break away from the majority if you're unsatisfied with being or dissatisfied with being average. Because the horde's average. Focus on remarkable. Focus on people and content that will encourage you to do something. Next, money isn't the only measurement for success. In fact, in some cases, it's not money at all. For the person who wants to successfully get fit and healthy, money's not part of that equation. For the father who wants to be world-class at being a good dad, well, there's no amount of money that's going to make that happen. Find more meaningful ways to measure success. I'm not saying that you can't use money as part of it, but don't let money be the totality of it. Carefully think about success and create your own definitions. Be true to who you really are. That may be better said, be true to who you really want to become and work like crazy to be that person. And there's nothing wrong, by the way, with getting input from people that are close to you, people that care about you, people that are vested in you. Next, refuse to lose. Listen, everybody gets knocked down. No harm, no foul. Well, unless you refuse to get back up. Always, 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 always get back up. Be ruthless and be determined in figuring out your own success. Listen, this is your dream. So it's up to you to make it come true. And you can't relinquish that responsibility to anything else or anybody else. So that leads me to the last one, and that is live a life without excuse. Fix things. I don't know what they are. Whatever it is that's in your way, whatever it is that's not working, figure it out. Change things. Take action. And then keep taking action until you start gaining momentum. Do more of what works. Do less of what does not. Stop looking at fool's gold. The possessive noun there, by the way, is the fool. Whose gold is it? Well, it's the fool's gold. Well, who's the fool? Well, that's you and that's me. When we deceive ourselves into thinking that we can avoid figuring out our own success. Spend your time staring at the fool's gold, or spend your time taking action to work out your own success. It's your time, and here's the good news. You can spend it any way you want to. I hope that helps. Well, I hope it at least gives you something to think about. More importantly, I hope it gives you some action steps and some things that you'll incorporate to help you along the way. I appreciate you listening. I got one simple request, and that is tell a friend. Tell a friend about the podcast. Okay, I got two. Tell a friend about the podcast. Go over to iTunes. Leave me a review. That'd be great. I know it's a hassle. It's not easy to do. I wish it was easy to leave a review for people at iTunes, but it's not. And so if you do that, man, it'd be awesome. It'd be really awesome. My name is Randy Cantrell. Again, the website is Leaning Toward Wisdom. You can find the show notes. Just look for episode 4016. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, from a place that I call the Yellow Studio.